Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials. Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive and I get to eat it. There's a lot to get to today. First things first, if you missed the last episode with Food Network's Spring Baking Championship finalist, pastry chef Nikki Boyd, go back and listen. You won't be disappointed. I've got to tell you, this whole podcasting thing is a labor of love. I slept 0.0% this week, and I still couldn't wait to jump into this production. Okay, so the reason is I was at a 3-day tornado tour out in Kansas and Oklahoma. We visited our friends at Cattleman's Choice Feed Yard and Creekstone Farms Processing Facility. Pictures coming soon. Our group consisted of our crew over at the Peninsula Food Service. That would be Milan and Veronica. Plus the culinary team at Oxford Commons, a hospitality company with an amazing portfolio of restaurants here in Tampa. Man, they're great. Check out oxcommons.com. A massive thank you to the team over at Creekstone. Jim Rogers, our main man, Sully, and John and Elsmo. You guys put on a terrific tour and our wonderful host. Giant thanks to Dale Moore, owner of Cattleman's Choice Feedlot. It's refreshing to meet people who actually treat animals with respect that they deserve. Chefs Richard Anderson, Billy Zico, Alex Hoeks, and the Myers boys, Joe and Lewis, unrelated. These culinary professionals are amazing people, and it was an honor to spend this unique and special moment in time with them. Also part of this esteemed group of chefs is Rachel Bennett, who will have to make it on the next trip. Okay, so today's guest can throw down in the kitchen. He's a French Culinary Institute grad who made his bones on the New York food scene, i.e. Tom Colicchio's River Park and Tao Group's Cathedral. Zakari is now home in Tampa as the executive chef of Catering by the Family, which is, if you're from the Tampa Bay area, you have heard of this company. They're a terrific outfit. Just a great, great story. And we'll get into that one day. He's also the most recent winner of Food Network's Chopped. Chef Zakari is on deck. Jefferson, I haven't seen you or John in a long time.
It seems like a long time, right?
Yeah. So, well, since Independence Day, like, you know, we're off. It's the first time we've taken off in a, I don't know, like, it feels like a year.
It has been.
Yeah. I am so geeked up on the food today, baby. So why don't you just jump into pre-shift and make it happen? Let's go.
Well, I mean, we have conversations and what we're going to do as far as the food content and what you're going to eat. And I switched parameters. I went to John and said, what's your favorite food? And one of them happens to be Frances.
Well, it happened to be my dad's.
Well, that's how we got started about it. But he said in a different way, where it was like the next week. And I said, give me a list. It was Ropa Vieja, the Frances, and two other things. I'm like, okay, we're going to do Frances. So I don't like doing things normal, as you know. So I was thinking about what we're going to do. And I said, hey, you got some shrimp. That's Gulf shrimp. Let's do something with this. And I made raviolis with it. I used ouzu marmalade inside it. I did a spinach, asparagus, blanched all that down, put it all together, had the binding of the shrimp, because the way that you, if you chop shrimp the right way, you can actually bind together itself. You don't have to add egg to it. Semolina dough, stretched that out, and then made a frances sauce. And then I took the shrimp shells, because I don't like wasting anything. And I made a shrimp stock, brought that down into a shrimp bisque, and then it hit it with some sherry to give it some complexity to it. And then I wanted to treat you guys to something different. That's why I didn't want to let the cat out of the bag, but plant-based, gyoza meat, feta, did sourdough pita, and I wanted to go all out. So tzatziki was vegan. The cheese was vegan. The bread was vegan. Everything on that plate was vegan. And I just wanted to have
the only thing that wasn't vegan is me. That's me, right. So real quick, you did really good on the Frances.
Thank you.
You know, it was actually reminiscent. It reminded me of my dad's. So that was really cool. So we were talking off air, and my dad passed last year, right? So I didn't touch any of the stuff until, you know, just about a week ago. So I'm going through all the boxes and things, and I found recipes from my grandmother to my dad, like just really cool stuff. And I'm so happy you did that. So what we're going to do, and because I think it was so close, and I did find the Frances recipe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, John just actually spoke for a minute.
He was breathing hard. So
his mic is actually on. He didn't shut it down.
So it's not like, you know, how we did for you and you made like a cup and you put, you know, like,
yeah,
right. That's actually written out. So I want to compare and see. We can do that off air. That's a whole nother
thing. So what's funny is that recipe was actually from my mentor, Teddy Andreozzi and Teddy Falco. It was an uncle and nephew that worked at Casabella Pastanache. That's where I learned. And actually, Dan, who is a chef over at Shenanigans, it was so similar when I worked over with Pat Utter in what is now closed, the West Hollywood one, by the T.Y. Park.
Yeah.
Dan used to work for Martha's. So I kind of emulated both the three of their recipes, and just, it's something I love to do. It's just one of those things that's, for me, it's something I grew up with. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, when you get sick, it's one of those comfort foods for me. And that's what I wanted.
That for me is one of those things I can eat whenever it's made.
Marcella, Saltimbocco. I mean, all of those.
Yeah, no, those are all good. But the Frances for me is a little bit more, you know,
meaningful.
Yeah. That was probably three times a month, you know, random, you know. It'll be 11:30 at night. Hey, yeah, we're going to make good. Okay, Pops. No problem. Yeah. And you know, that spice, that's the sauce that you did there.
Which one?
With the scotch bonnet.
Oh, the fuego. Yeah.
Yeah.
The fuego de culo.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. For you.
Yeah. It's a good sauce.
So let's bottle it.
Okay.
What do you say?
I'm down. Seriously. I mean, There's no other sauce that's out there that's like that. And I wanted to be different. I wanted to have some sweetness, and then chef tried it, and he'll tell you later on when he comes on if he wants. It's just got a sweet, it's got a balance there. The scotch bonnets, I'm growing myself. I know that when you're having it with a mash, where Steve does that for Tillman's, when you're doing it in a mash and high volume like that and producing it, you have to have consistency. So that's when they go to a mash. And I know that when I talked to Steve, they did that. But it's something I definitely want to do. Yeah, it's one of my favorite ones.
Well, you know, Walk and Talk Media is slowly getting to a place where we're going to start, you know, getting into some branding and some behind the scenes sort of deals on food products. And it's very exciting. What's going on?
The jacket is one of my favorite ones. That's going to be one of the swags we're going to put out.
Yeah. Don't drop any names. I'm not dropping any names. We're putting the portfolio together as we speak. And we're going to be going very soon on that.
I do want to say one thing. That grouper Reuben, when I mentioned it today, that little kid smirk you had, I've never seen you smirk like that.
That generally made me happy.
No, I'm telling you, it definitely did.
Like, no, because listen, I can appreciate all sorts of different food, all types of food. You know, even if it's not something I'm going to, if it's not my go-to dish or whatever, or profile or whatever, I'm going to still enjoy it. I'll find something and I'll be like, you know what? That was good about it. That grouper sandwich, that's just like one giant checkbox, you know, and it's one big check. Because you know what? It's fresh. It was not heavy. It had all sorts of layers in it on the profile. And damn it, I'll eat that every day. I'll literally eat that every single day.
Like I told you, I'm going to make the rye sourdough and now I'm going to do it again.
By the way, speaking of eat every day, this trip, right? It was from Monday morning early, super early. Butt crack of dawn early, all the way to, you know, 2 a.m. when I got home, you know,
last this morning,
night, Wednesday. Yeah. Today, last night, right. Morning, whatever. And man, I got to tell you, I went there at 2:14. I'm 2:20. It hasn't like, I came home at 2:20. I know my wife's not listening, so I can tell you. But my goodness. But it was nothing but like, dude.
You 6 pounds?
Let me tell you something. Yes. Of all like prime meat.
Yes. You know, I smelled. I thought it was the lamb that smelled. It's actually you sweating. You have meat sweats.
It's my new cologne. It's awesome. No, listen. It was nothing but bourbon and beautiful meat. Oh, my God. It was so amazing. The farm tour was fantastic. Like the just that whole processing facility by Creekstone. Amazing. Equally as cool was the feedlot, like the ranch, which I had never been to one of those. You know, I grew up in South Florida. Behind me was land, you know, similar to where, you know, we were in Oklahoma. Like it's just, there's open land, acres over acres over acres and cattle on it. But I'd never been to it. You know, that wasn't my property. And granted, we used to sneak in there, but I never got to see anything. Long story short, what a great experience. I like to put a trip together for our team here, Walk and Talk, and make it happen. I think that we would.
We're not fighting you.
No, I don't think you would. No, and I already kind of like seeded this.
You dropped it. You planted.
Of course. Come on. Yeah. You know how I get down. All right. Enough about that. We're going to make that happen. Let's talk.
I'm available tomorrow.
No, I
you're not.
I'm not. I can't. I shouldn't take any blood work right now.
No, yeah. No. No,
they would ban me from coming to the show. Doctor say no more walk and talk. I said okay, let's talk Food Network. What do you say?
I think so. The guy that down to my left definitely would probably want to talk about it.
Right. All right. Let's.
Isn't that why he's here?
Exactly.
One of the reasons.
Chef, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
No, man, our pleasure. You know, I've been telling people about this episode. You know, friends and. You know, acquaintances and whatnot, the people we talk to.
Strangers.
Like, hey, by the way, you have an interesting personality, man. You know, you're about 30 or so, 31, 32,
30, 32.
32. And man, you're just like one ball of energy and a big smile. And I think when it comes to the industry, it's needed. Because you still have to command, you still have to lead your team, you still have to, you know, all, you know, procurement, the whole nine yards, and then execute what you're trying to do. But you got such a great personality. So first of all, thank you for that because you're a good dude.
Yeah, thank you.
Why don't you take a minute and give the airplane view of who you are and where you came from and how you landed here.
You know,
chefs and food buyers. Let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Not born in Tampa, born in Seattle, but mainly raised in Tampa Bay. Family's deep rooted in Ybor City. 20 years old, decided I wanted to cook professionally. So sat down with my dad. We went to a bar at 20. I was getting ready to kind of sell insurance. What the family business was. And I'm like, man, I want to be a chef. I want to do this. You know, not most people pick this thing to do for the rest of their life. And I'll never forget it. We go to Four Green Fields. We sit there and I'm like, hey, let's take a shot. Like, I got to tell you something. So right when we go to take a shot, right before he takes it, I go, I want to be a chef. And he just slams a glass on the counter and he looks at me. He goes, all right, well, you're going to have to go to New York. And I'm like, I've never been to New York City before. I've never seen it. Never been. So 20 years old, culture shock. Go to New York, start my journey. I'm in culinary school, night program, 3 days a week. And then start working under Tom Colicchio at River Park. So 7 days a week, I'm in a kitchen all the time and exposed to this city of, like, you know, coming from Tampa Bay to New York is...
It's debaucherous.
Yeah. It's the first thing I said when I came up playing is like, wow, there's a lot of trash here.
Nothing has changed.
Yeah. From there, you know, just kind of immersed myself in cooking and the whole journey there. It was an experience, something that I think I strongly advise to anybody that kind of goes in this industry is go out of the box, go somewhere.
Well, just the two outfits that you mentioned to us is a big deal, you know?
Yeah.
Colicchio's and Cathedral.
Tao Group. I was with La Pecora Bianca for a while. So, you know, did my rounds, you know, and it's just the city in general. Just, you see the grind and the hustle and then the culinary, it's just perfection. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts, and kind of came up in the world before HR was a thing. So there were, those chefs were not easy on you.
Jeff, how lucky are we?
There was no cell phones?
Nothing. Like, there's no proof. All it is rumor. That's it.
Yeah, the 90s never happened.
Never happened. Because
there's no evidence. No picture evidence of it. Let's put it that way.
I mean, I feel terrible for some of the things, you know, that we used to do. Like, after... So, I'm from the business too, but not at the level of anybody here. And I was always front of the house. But my favorite, my funnest, I should say, job in a restaurant was at Bennigan's. Okay. And this is like mid-90s Bennigan's. And it was just crazy because, you're working.
It happened.
You're probably...
it literally happened.
Yeah, like you're lit up working. You know what I mean? It was just like a movie. It's
just like... Any story you heard, like waiting is the perfect example of what the restaurant industry was back in the 90s.
Yeah, specifically there. But then we would end up at like...
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans first and then Flickerlight.
Flickerlight.
Yeah, yeah. And then we would throw...
Which is still around, by the way, today.
One specific day, there was about 10 of us from the restaurant. And we ended up there, and it got a little crazy. The drinks were flowing. The shots were just endless. And all of a sudden, somebody, you know, threw a dish in the water. And we're like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing, man? And then another dish, and then a chair, and then a table, and then another chair. And then you look down the intracoastal, because this restaurant is, like, right on the water.
Literally on the water.
And there's the plastic chairs and the tables are just floating down the intercoastal and the plates are, and you know, I'm like, what the hell are you guys doing? Cause of course I would never do that, but
it was probably you.
I'm not admitting to any of that, but then a buddy of mine who was the bartender, and I can't even remember his name, but he was funny as he should have been a stand-up comedian. He gets out to the dumpster, and this guy, he's like, come on, everybody was whacked. And the dumpster went over. Yeah, it was that day. Yeah, I don't know how we didn't go to jail that night. Honest to God,
there's a lot of times I don't know how I went
anyway, go
to jail.
I just put this into the universe, right? But again, I admit to nothing that it was me. All right, back to you. All right, enough about the 90s. How important was being part of Chomp? You know, ultimately, you went in there. And you won. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. It was an accomplishment, right? Like, I think a big self-gratification moment, right? You went in to a kitchen you don't know, recipes that are wacky. And a clock that's very real, right? Like, before going in, I'm like, no way. Like, this time's not real. No, it's real. it's moving. And to go through and win and, you know, meet the other competitors and kind of see their background and see how they move really opened your eyes to this whole competition realm of even the production side too, like Food Network and what they do. And it makes me hungry. I want more.
How did they contact you?
It was on Instagram. It was a casting agency that just reached out to me and we got on a phone call. She's like, I love you. Like, you're great. Let's do a Zoom call. So we do a Zoom call and usually you have to do a couple. It was just like one. And I'm like, oh, they're not going to call me back. I get a call. I'm in Savannah, Georgia. That's where I was working at the time. I get a call and they're like, hey, can you leave next week to Chow House? Somebody bailed out. And I'm like, no, I can't. I can't just leave my job. I'm culinary director. And they're like, all right, well, we'll call you back. And then like another 2 weeks, it's like, hey, we have you on episode of Chop. This is the day. And it's like, it was like a month out. So I was like, okay, let me get ready to do this competition.
I mean, they're both great shows, but Chopped is like the, I feel like Chopped is one of the premier.
It is.
Right?
It has become that, yeah.
Yeah. That's so
cool. Even though some of the stuff is, like he said, it was kind of wacky, some of the ingredients.
Yeah, some of the ingredients get a little like come on, man.
what's funny to me, or what's interesting to me, is the lead up to getting on the show, like how the communication happens. I think that's fast to me. That's the fascinating part, because the reality is social media matters. You know, everybody, we all want to, you know, wag a finger at, you know, social media, but in the end it changes lives potentially.
Yeah. And it's like a lot of it, you know, you can apply to the show and stuff. And most people I've known that have got on it was social media. We get somebody reaching out, caster, agency. And then once you kind of get in that world, that like Food Network world, now you continually get
you're in a rotation.
Yeah. Like they'll continue like, hey, what do you think about this show that's coming up? Like, what do you, and now you're kind of in that realm and you can build up in that realm if you want.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
Yeah, it's interesting because, well, another interesting component of this is that, what, the last 2 months, 3 months, something-ish, quarter, you know, we've had a fairly decent flow of Food Network folks coming through here.
We should have, by now, he would have been the fourth one.
More than that.
No, because we had Robert. We had...
But this is Nikki. He's the only winner.
No, I know that. What I'm saying is...
You're the gold star standard. Now. Well, I just want you to know that.
Well, Steven's going to come on. I guarantee you, from the spring show. I know that Robert's been talking.
I don't want to talk. Listen, this this man here is our. This is he is the feature. Oh goodness! Can you believe it? You see what I got to deal with here?
So what about Rosanna, who beat Bobby Flay?
Okay, yeah, Bobby Flay. Right? You know, see, I'm losing track myself. All right, well, hey, look, you can't. Sleep. You got to bow down to Rosanna. Hey, you got to bow down to Rosanna.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you know who she is?
No, I know. You told me though recently. Where does she work here?
She's in St. Peter.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, what was the dish she beat Bobby Flay with?
Oh, empanadas.
The empanadas.
No
he has
way.
Never. He has never won what we were told by her. He has never won an empanada competition.
Wow. So she just went for the throat.
Right in. And I think that's the first. Was it the
first? She was the first female.
Right. Yeah. I mean, listen, she battled her husband to get there.
Yeah. It was a husband and wife.
That really? Was the reason. Yeah. They were looking for something and they were talking to her and like, oh, my husband's the chef. He's the pastry chef, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, you guys want to go on the show together? And she thought it was going to be like a Valentine's Day thing. And she's like, nope, it was totally not. And it was like legit. And
wait, it was all three of them.
So she battled her husband. Like the first part, you have to battle somebody else.
That's right.
And then once you win that part, cause you're cooking what Bobby wants, then you cook what you want against Bobby. So she beat her husband to get.
That's savage.
Well, and our whole conversation, funny enough, the whole conversation was that he was over here.
Yeah.
I'm like, so do you guys get along?
Is it working out?
And she goes, oh, no, he's like 100%. He really wanted me to do it. And it's great when you have a person that you're a partner with, both in life and in business, that you can have that. And they are, they do catering too. And they do the,
but
they do so much together. It's really great to see that, how they kind of gel.
Let's talk about your dish. What did you make?
Oh, today?
Yes. Well, yeah, we're going to get to that. We're not done with Chopped.
My dishes.
Yeah. Bring it back.
Oh man. So the first basket was a vanilla milkshake, spicy Cheeto mac and cheese, a head of cauliflower, and then like smoked turkey legs, like pre-cooked ones that you buy from like a theme park, like a big old turkey leg. So I kind of took the milkshake I made and the cauliflower and did like a vanilla cauliflower puree and put that on the bottom plate. I made a turkey salad. I used the packet from the Cheeto mac and cheese to season it, but I added like tarragon, chives, just tried to bring some more flavors, a little bit of red onion, and then did like a radicchio salad on the side. So that was my first dish.
And how long did you have for that?
That was a 20-minute round.
And you don't find out what the ingredients are until you open that basket,
correct? No, they'll give you the basket and you try to peek through a little bit, but they're like blacked out. You cannot see what's in those baskets.
So you have no idea what.
No
you
idea. Up.
So okay.
No idea. You open it up and then you put everything in front of you and then you're like, okay, this is what I have to work with. And the part that doesn't really register, well, at least with me, like right away, was the use of ingredients, right? So like you can, I guess with the mac and cheese it did, but you can use as little or as a lot of the ingredients you want. So if like for instance, the vanilla milkshake, if you just want to use the cherry on top, you can just use that. But then you have to deal with, is it kind of incorporated in the dish? Is it taste? Did you use it right? So my kind of whole thing going into every round was, let me take two ingredients in the basket and kind of combine them together. And then from there, I know I'm using those good and then I can move forward.
What's your anxiety level? Before you get there, right? You're like, okay, Chopped. All right, here's my date. I got to go do my stuff, right? And maybe you don't even think about it because you're still working and you're fixated on what you have to do for your, you know, for your career, for work. Then you get there and now it's like, it starts to become a little bit more real, right? You start to meet contestants, you're seeing what's going on, cameras everywhere. Like all of a sudden you're thinking to yourself, uh-oh, I got to cook. I got to represent, right? What's your stress level?
It wasn't high. It came natural. It didn't bother me.
You know, I would normally not believe the person saying that to me, but like if you're looking at your demeanor, I think it's true. What do you think? Okay. See, John spoke.
Yeah, he did. It's
true.
But yeah, it came very natural. I just went in and I kind of just blocked everything out and cooked. I was like, I'm just going to come here and cook. I'm not going to try to do something crazy, go out of the box and do these things where people are like wrapping beef and Swiss chard. That's what one of my competitors did and didn't go well for him. But I was like, I'm just going to sear a steak. I'm going to cook it well. Like I'm going to stick to the basics as basic, but then use these wacky ingredients. And that was just my plan. So I'm like, all right, if I cook, I'll cook. If somebody cooking better than me, then they're cooking better than me. But I was just going to go in there and give it. Now, the cameras and everything didn't really bother me.
I think the other aspect too is I asked him, did he prep for it? And did he practice for it? And your response was?
I was like, I've been practicing 12 years now.
Which is a great answer.
Right. No, yeah. you were ready for it.
Yeah.
See, but that's cool, man. And that, if it were me, I would just be, it would be nerves, all nerves, nothing but nerves.
You'd be in the fetal position on the floor.
No. I'm not a sissy. I would get out there and do
I'm
it.
I'm not saying if you were a sissy or not.
No fetal position, but I would be nothing but nerves, right? And I would have to sit there and spend days and I don't know how many, you know, practice runs doing just it.
Training.
Yeah. Like I'm talking like 1980s. Like
Rocky. Yeah. You got to run up. Flight of stairs.
With
a ladle. And
well, that might be at 220. That might be something dangerous for you right now. You might want to wait.
So funny story. We're coming back from Oklahoma City, right?
Did they ask you to move to balance the plane?
All right. So we have a connection flight in Atlanta. And of course the plane is delayed, right? Oh. And you know, on to Atlanta where we're going to catch our connecting flight.
Oh, so it's even worse.
It's worse, horrible. Yeah. And there's like 10 of us on this trip and we're just, you know, everybody's going different places, whatever. I had to run. I was sprinting. Okay. Yeah.
Is there footage?
No. I mean, it's footage may exist, but I don't
it's
think
Jackson so. Hatfield.
Something. So I ran and I was doing the running and I would hit those like walking, you know, the walk people movers, yeah, whatever. Yeah. And I'm still running on the people mover. And I was just thinking to myself, man, when I have to hit the pavement, you know, like when I'm off that thing, I better be careful. Cause I'm not going to be the guy that just eats it on the, you know, cause then there's somebody would have a freaking camera at that point. But yeah, no, I ran all the way there, man. It was crazy. I wasn't the only one. The whole group was doing it. I was like, all right.
Were you last?
No.
I've been that dude. I have literally been that dude. It's the worst
running
feeling.
With a group of people.
Oh, yeah.
I have enough healthy vanity to where I don't want to be like, you know, I was suffering when we got to the thing. I suffered. There's no question. Like, I was not happy. And I'm huffing and puffing. But no, I wasn't. I was not the last one. I represented.
He showed up.
I was mad. Sweating from head to toe. Like, it was terrible. You know, by the way, it was crazy. This was like 6 a.m. Central time, right? The day started. Hit these field, you know, the feed lots and all that. And I didn't get home till 2 a.m. Eastern time. That was the entire day was like just nonstop. I feel like a champion though.
Until he gets home later today and crashes out for a day.
Just gone.
That's going to happen.
Saturday morning, we're going to get, hey, I just woke up.
Well, that's going to happen. And I embrace that. I look forward to it. How does it feel to, so from a chef's perspective, what are the differences between catering and restaurants? I kind of want to go into a different direction here.
Yeah. Wow. There's a huge difference.
Which do you like better?
No. Ooh. Don't do that to him. So which one do you like better?
I mean, my heart's with restaurants, right? Like, that's where I came up in. That's where I live. Like, restaurants, especially when I started out in restaurants, because River Park especially was a special place. You walked in and you can just see how everyone was competing against each other. Like, you were there to help each other, but the talent that was in the room.
It was a build-up. Everybody's building each other up.
Right? Yeah, like, you wanted to be a sous chef before that guy was sous chef. There wasn't like, oh, I've been here for 2 years, now I get promoted. It was like, no, you're going to show up and you're going to work. Like, catering's a different world, though. And I see, you know, I was the event chef with Tom Colicchio, so there was that sense of, like, catering. But it was like catering within our own area. So we had our own banquet halls and stuff like that. We had the kitchen. We had all our firepower that we can do to get it out. Now, catering, now what I'm doing now is a whole different ballgame, right? Like, it's packing up a truck, making sure hot boxes, not forgetting anything, bringing stuff on site. What can we execute in a site? What, it's the best of what I said to you guys earlier when we were talking about the kitchen. What I tell chefs is you have to be a chameleon. You have to adjust into your environment. Because a lot of restaurant people, you know, you come to that restaurant for 2 years, 3 years, you know the ins and outs, you know everything about it. Catering is going to throw a different ballgame at you. Yeah, you'll learn the venues, you'll learn this here and there, but you're still going to have to adjust to things. So there is that sense of like adjustment that gets you excited, keeps you on your toes. But, you know, restaurants where I started. Maybe down the line I'll like catering more. I still love catering. Don't get me wrong.
It's a different challenge.
Exactly.
Right? Would you say that catering, I have three people in front of me that I'm going to ask.
One doesn't have a mic.
One without a mic. Juan is in the house.
And he's taking notes.
Definitely taking notes. Sorry, man. So, I mean, you know the CEO is sitting right here.
By the way, I didn't set you up for that one because he's sitting next to me. Here's my thought process, right? Because I've been, I don't know how long, in the restaurant industry and the catering. Catering to me is a lot easier because you know exactly what you're getting into.
That is a big thing. So like when you go to prep, it's like, all right, you know, on the line, I'm going to get hit with, you know, you can look at your big hitters or whatever. But when you come to catering, you're like, I know exactly what I need for the weekend. I know exactly what
unless it's a pop-up party that or something that comes up.
But most of those, it's not like a 1,000-person pop-up party.
Even if it's 1,000, we have a saying, I'm prepping for one or I'm prepping for 1,000. I'm just going to go through the motion of whatever I need to do.
Is catering the same as banquets at a hotel?
Yeah, I think there's some.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, I would say yes on that.
There is.
So one says
I got a three yeses, two and a half.
I think, yeah, it is. I mean, I don't have too much experience in the hotel world. I've seen them, and I see the similarities, chafing dishes, the kind of this.
I think, you know, what Chef said was they have the firepower when he was at Tom Colicchio's. He had the firepower there, and in a hotel, you have the firepower mm-hmm. there. When you're doing catering and you're doing specifically off-site catering, you are a MacGyver.
Yeah.
Like if you don't go to the venue first to find out what the venue is, and you don't shop the venue and you don't know what you're going into, what you expect.
A lot of those venues don't have the right equipment too for you,
or even just the plug. Equipment. Like right. you're bringing a hot box and it's shorting out every 5 seconds when you're like, what plug can I use here?
you don't know the electricity of the place.
Pull out a lighter and start cooking things. I don't know.
Who's responsible to find that out? Who's supposed to do recon? Who scouts that?
We have staff. The salesperson will go there and check out the venue. Then we have meetings weekly that we discuss, you know, what they'll bring it. Hey, this is the layout. This is what we can do. A lot of them know, like, hey, we can fry on site. We can't fry on site. We can do this on site, you know, here and there. And then as a chef coming in, like what logistically makes sense on our end? Like what can we, all right, yeah, maybe we can cook this on site. Now we don't have to worry about doing that here. We're going to create a better product there. Or do we do it here and then send it there because you have nothing to do, but then we're going to send it at a later time to make the product good. Or maybe we hold it like this. You don't wrap this because it's fried. So there is a lot of elements to it where it's not, you're in a restaurant and you make a dish and then you send it to the guests. It's a different world, even on plate ups too. Like it's completely different. And, you know, I think another big part of it too is I would like to say the type of people that you kind of get in those different kind of restaurants, because the catering lifestyle does add a lot better quality of life. When you're in the restaurants, you're, especially the higher you get up in restaurants, you're so immersed in it.
Listen, I binge watched all three seasons of The Bear.
I got text messages.
I was texting this guy, and it was so.
I still haven't gotten through season one.
I only did season two halfway, and it was just like it got away from cooking for me, and I'm like, well too much
on,
drama.
Hold on, let me just get into this for a second, because I think that it was so well done. Okay, the whole thing was so well done. Obviously, they're looking to. It seems that they want to draw this out for a few more seasons, right? So you have to have some character development that goes on with it. And that's where it starts getting a little bit off of cooking. Yeah. But once you get, and there were like a handful of episodes where I was like, oh, okay, this is dragging, you know, but man, once you get past that and you get back into it, they don't miss a beat. They don't miss anything. And for me, there were so many nuances about being in the business that I had forgotten, like the feelings, you know, you can look at it and go, I know that happens,
yeah.
But you don't remember the feeling of it. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, I'm watching, I'm eating potato chips, and I'm just like, I'm sweating, you know, I'm sweating, and it's crazy. I think it's such a great show, and I did the three seasons in 1 week.
That's insane.
I think one of the best shows that really emulates what the restaurant industry goes through is John Favreau's Chef, the behind the scenes chef show.
Oh yeah.
When he does the makeup of how he went through the, and I never knew the training that not only he went through, but did you see the Josh Rogan one that he went?
No.
So they're doing it and it's Wolfgang Puck and John Favreau and Roy Choi and Josh Rogan. And they're talking and they're like, we're going to do chicken. And all of a sudden he picks up the knife, the comedian, and he starts whacking the chicken. And I'm like, holy, he's got skills. And he goes, don't you remember I did that movie called Chicken Something? And I'm like, I didn't even know he did a movie called Chicken. He goes, I had to go ahead and fabricate like cases of chicken the right way because I have to do this for my job.
You could see he's got knife skills.
Seriously. And then John Favreau, when he was working with Chef Wolfgang Puck, as soon as I heard Wolfgang's voice, it's like, I just went, oh, I used to work for him. And as soon as he slaps John Favreau and says, you want your stuff to taste like silicone, because he was using the high heat silicone spatula, he goes, use a fork. And I'm like, oh God, that just triggered me. That's exactly how Wolfgang was. But the way they went through the process to emulate what really goes on in the restaurant industry was bravo. I mean, seriously, just fantastic, because it really captures what we go through
on the personal level with our family, especially this particular story with John Favreau and his character and Dustin Hoffman, how that whole started out. And then he went to the food truck and had this son. It's a beautiful way of like emulating what we go through in the restaurant industry. Bear is too much for me right now because it triggered me for what happened a couple of years ago. Will I get over it? Eventually, I'll probably end up sitting down and watching it. But right now I can't. There's no way.
There was a few parts in this in there. My family is not like the family there, but some of it was.
You know? You mean Richie?
No, a percentage of the mother.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm just, and it, that freaked me out. Richie, you know, I can identify with that character a little bit, you know, but then he ends up coming around, you know, and that's the cool part about it. The characters have growth. I think it's super. Anyway, you know, I can't stop talking about it. I'm just, I'm a huge proponent of this series, man.
As long as they put the limelight on us in the right way, as
exactly.
far as the industry
yeah.
is.
Well,
I think they're accurate. Forget the limelight.
Well, that's what I'm saying. As long as they keep it to what it really is and they don't embellish or they don't do like the menu, for instance. Like, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We would all like to do that.
Yeah. It's a lot of like, you know, glorification in this industry. And you see a lot of, you know, it's funny because I remember when I was younger in this industry and I come in the kitchen. A
couple of years ago.
it was 12 years. I was 20 years old. And I walk in the kitchen and, you know, there's guys in there, 30, 35, 40 sous chefs or whatever. And, you know, they're the real deal. Like they're throwing down and you don't realize when you first get in, you know, I want to create dishes. I want to do this cool stuff. You don't realize how much repetition it is. It's not coming in there and like, oh, I'm going to like be this superstar chef and I'm going to create a cool dish or I'm going to cook plate this. Like even at nice, like if you got a Michelin star restaurant, it's repetition. It's doing the same thing every day. It's
like 300 covers.
I was brunoising shallots every day. And until I got good at it and I wasn't good in a week. I wasn't good in a month. I wasn't good in 2 months. I was good in like a year, 2 years, 3 years. I'm like, oh wow, I can use my knife really good now. Like, and you get a lot of that, like kind of just people that don't really understand that. And I think a lot of it comes from shows and stuff because they'll see this. And, you know, Food Network had a big thing. When I was in culinary school, you had a lot of kids are like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be a chef. You know what? Like, look at David Chang and Bobby Flay. And I'm like, yeah, they still went and got rocked. Like, it's a hard game.
It's funny, I just had this conversation somewhere, I don't remember, but before Food Network, and I'm not pro or con on Food Network, you know, they serve a purpose, they do what they do well, right? Before then, the people who ended up in kitchens, you found your way there. You know, it was because you had a...
Not all of us.
You had a...
Some of us were idiots and said, I want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that... Guilty.
Yeah, hold on. That percentage is very small.
Oh, yeah.
Very small percentage.
100%.
Okay, so usually you had a record. It was, you know, like last resort. I guess
I'll get it over to the kitchen.
Right. Exactly. So, but then you had the advent of, you know, these like superstar celebrity chefs and culinary school, and all of a sudden now people are going to school because they see all of the glitz and the glam, but well, they're still you still have to learn, you still have to get, like you said, get rocked, you still got to get kicked in the face.
Well, that's
if you don't get kicked in the face, you'll never be anything.
You got to get kicked in the face a lot.
Well, there's a right way of getting kicked in the face. Yeah. I think there's a way to do it the right way. Back when I was going in, well, I started when I was 12. So
child labor laws.
Yeah.
It wasn't. But by the time I had gotten to culinary school and I was in my externship, I was working at La Cucina Toscana in Weston. And the chef there was French trained, loved Italian food and stuff that we went through, even with HR. Today, we couldn't do that. There's just no way. So there's things that we have to do differently. But I think when you were talking about superstars, for me, the superstar for me, and I mentioned this when we talked to Kurt and some other episodes, I had Julia Childs, I had Graham Cure, I had, I think Galloping Gourmet is Graham Cure, and Jacques Pepin. Those were the people I watched. I didn't watch, I did watch cartoons, but I also, when I wanted to watch something to get my mind off of school or whatever I was doing, I always gravitated to food. And that was the culture I was raised in.
But it was a process, because you went from that first group right? Mm-hmm. And then you started getting into like the Emeralds and all.
Well, these Emerald came out when I was in culinary school, and when I first saw Emerald, and he was a JWU grad, and he would sit there and double dip and taste the food with his finger. Like, you just, oh my God, where's the serve safe? And you would like, you know, because that's when you were going through culinary, and it's so funny, and he's gonna laugh, and so is Juan. Every time you go through a food service, like when the health inspector comes in, for about 3 days, you guys are on your tiptoes. And, yeah. We're gonna do it this way now, and then all of a sudden things go back to the way they were. Yeah. And everybody probably right now is going, yeah, he's right.
Yeah.
Instead of just doing it from the get-go.
Yeah.
Right? But I think that's the difference between what we do. No? So you're that guy?
Yeah.
Processes matter.
Oh, I would 100%. But I think for you, what made you at 20 go to your father, I want to be chef?
So a lot of it stemmed from, it started with my grandmother. So I'm really, really close to my grandparents. And my grandmother would wake up in the middle of the night to stir a sauce kind of like thing. Like,
is this Cuban grandmother or
she was Cuban. Yeah. So like just big into cooking, but she didn't really cook like Cuban food. She did, but like she cooked she was creative. She would make stuff from scratch, like make her own dishes. So I always thought that was intriguing. And I remember her telling me, she's like, just put whatever you want in it. If you like it, make it taste good. So that kind of sparked my creativity. And I started like cooking here and there. When I was around 12, my dad started cooking heavily, very into Food Network. So this is the Food Network time. And he would get it wine, drink wine, and just have Food Network on, play some music maybe. And then he would just cook dishes. And he's a phenomenal cook. Like, he's very good. And being young, I just sat there and watched them on the bar. And that was the first time in my family, because, you know, my mother, both my grandmothers. Both my grandmothers. It was always the women that cooked. So when I saw my dad doing it and like really doing it, like making pasta from scratch or like breading beautiful chicken or whatever he was doing, making paella, he did that a lot. It was like, I was like, oh man, guys can cook. Like, and you know, I didn't even know the whole restaurant industry. And it's actually funny. So I started working with Steve, catering owner by Catering Family, when I was around, you know, 17 or 18. And I was cleaning dishes there. I never did it. And then, you know, went to New York, and Steve always kind of like would come visit me, because me and his son's my same age as me. And it's just like a full circle now. I'm back there. And I think that's interesting. But the whole thing was watching my dad cook. I think I was like, oh man, guys can cook. I'm going to start cooking. And I think I just had a natural work ethic, because the way they drilled me. So my work ethic was very hardworking person. My palate was very quickly, like I had one. Like, and you know, a lot of people don't necessarily, and some people never get their palate. But my palate was there, and the creativity kind of grew, but I think it was just the attraction to it. I played sports growing up, so it was almost, it's a competitive field, right? Like you're on your legs, you're running around, you're sweating, you can't use the bathroom because you're behind the line for 6 hours cooking.
Cornstarch works in a lot of different ways.
So this depends.
Yeah.
Whoa. What?
Hey, that's not, if you can't get to the bathroom. So it's, he knows the story. You should have been there.
Stop it.
I'm not going there.
Stop it. Oh my God.
But I think that competitive field, it was very, you know, I wasn't going to be a professional football player or baseball player. I knew that, but I was like, man, you get in this realm and you just meet some of the coolest people, man. Like some of them from all over, like some people that have, you know, I don't necessarily see or haven't seen in maybe 7 years, but I still talk to.
Well, whenever when you share time in a restaurant, and you get your butt kicked, and you might be in the back there and everybody's yelling and, you know, daggers at each other and whatever, to put it nicely. But like when you do that and you go through that a little bit of time with somebody, even the people you didn't like, you end up kind of buddying up with. And that's the cool part, I think, about the business, is like you make some really good friendships and with people that you wouldn't have been friendly with, you know, because you know who they are and you know kind of what they do. But when you when you bleed together like that, man, if there's a bond.
Absolutely.
Well, it's not only that, it's breaking bread too. Like when you have family meal, we've talked about that too. You sit down, you see, especially if you're the chef or the leader, you're there with those people more than you see your own family. So they are an extension of your family. So there are going to be times where you're going to argue. There's times where you're not. But at the end of the day, when you set yourself up for success, and I'm about to lead into a question for you, it's a great thing. My question now is taking over something has been a heritage style catering. How long has it been in business?
Steve's had it for 40 years.
So 40 years. And you've got line cooks and people, prep cooks that have been there for how long?
Some of them, I think 5, 10 years. Tim's been there for 20 years.
So my question is, like, taking over a kitchen where someone's been there that long, which is almost as long as you've been alive, how do you then cater how do you cater your leadership skills to get that person to then buy into what you want to do?
This is awesome, because it's funny, because Tim, being 20 years there, he knew me when I was a kid at the shop. So he knew me when I was little coming to the shop, and now I'm there. You know, it's how I would do anywhere. Being a leader to me isn't barking orders or telling people what to do and standing over or on top of people. It's getting down and dirty, right? Like I can cook a pretty dish and stuff, but I get gritty. Like, I'm in there, I'm cleaning, I'm on my hands and knees, and I will do it with you every day. There might be some days I get pulled away for a meeting, but in doing all that, you gain that respect, right? So that when it comes time to, like, oh, I got to get pulled away to go to a party, or I got to do this, and they're getting slammed, then they kind of respect that. And I think that's followed me. It took me a long time to realize that, because when I first became a sous chef, I was in a very hostile place, because everyone's just barking orders and we're lighting people up. That's what we did. And everything kind of changed, and you had to learn to kind of adapt. And like, what do I have to do as a leader? What leadership's quality do I have to create? And I think that was the best way is to create a leader. Like, to become a leader, you have to show a team that's been there for a long time that, like, hey, I can do it, but I'm going to do it faster. I'm there before you. I'll stay after you. I'm going to clean longer than you. And you do this not for a week, not for a month. You do this continuously. And then you build a team that trusts you, and you don't have a target on your back and wants to be by your side and will do anything they can to help you. So, you know, it's just hard work. And then in doing that, what I've learned is also another big trait about a leader is creating other leaders, right? Like, necessarily, I don't want to be the only leader. A lot of chefs have that problem. Like, you know, power of, like, I'm the only leader, I run the room. It's not about that. Like, because they want all the glory, and you want everyone, all eyes on you. At the end of the day, if somebody comes to the room and all eyes are on my team, and my team is doing well, and they've progressed, then I know that, and it's a reflection of me.
Well, you have to have the security in yourself in order to do that. And that's where a lot of people fall on their face.
Well, and we've talked about what's the difference between a leader and a boss. The boss is the one that, like he said, it was
barking orders.
A leader needs to roll up the sleeves and get down and dirty.
Yeah.
I think the attribute too is like the creativity part of it. Like, how do you get them as a mentor, and how do you get your team to, like, do you have tastings? Do you have, like, you go to we're going to have you come up with a dish, and you give them enough time, whatever it is. Do you do stuff like that to get them involved in menu development?
Not yet. That's definitely the plan. That's one of the harder things, right, that I've learned is spiking people's creativity. Mine was spiked so young, and I'll never forget it. Shout out to Jesse, because I fucking love him. So he created a dish, and I'll never forget it. He kind of brought me to the front of the table. We're doing a tasting, and it was a beautiful Swiss chard pan perdue, bavette steak. It looked like a log, and then carrots, and it looked like a forest, like the whole dish. And he looks at me and he goes, "What do you think it needs on it?" I was like, "Man, maybe if you pickle the Swiss chard stems, it'll be cool." And I said that, and I'm like, he's like, "That is a good idea." So he put it on the dish, and it went on the menu. And that kind of, like, just that little thing, like, he always kept us involved.
But that's a big deal.
Yeah. And for him, and I've always told him that, like, we're very close friends. He runs restaurants in New York for Andrew Carmelini. But that little thing he did to me when I was, you know, 22, it did something in my head where I was like, whoa, like, that's awesome. He like took my advice and he was interested in what I said. And he actually went through with it. So then that made me like want to be involved even more. Like I didn't feel shunned out.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't, you know, a lot of people get a newspaper across the nose when they do stuff like that because it's in the face of what I created.
Exactly.
And how could you know better than me? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and that's something that should change. That's a thing.
And one of the biggest changes I've ever seen, it was Anthony Bourdain when he was in Denmark and he was with Renee from Noma. And after the shift, they had all the cooks there and they were doing, it was like, you know, late at night, shift was over. And there was X amount of chefs or cooks that were presenting dishes to the entire team. And this one kid was traveling around and going to work, and he picked all these things as he was doing like Noma does, and they did the dish, and Anthony Bourdain looks at, you know, Renee, and he says, what do you think? He goes, this is fantastic. You don't need to do anything else. This is incredible, blah, blah, blah. And then Anthony looked at him like the normal American chef and said, so is it going to go on your menu? And Renee looked at him and goes, absolutely not. This is his dish. We're just checking where he's at, and he's perfected what he needs to do. And I sat there and pondered that for a minute because, you know, that was 2016, 2015 when I saw that. So I'd already been in the industry for God knows how long. But by that point, I'm like, wow, what a thing. Because most chefs are like, that's mine. You just gave it to me. It's mine now. Yeah. I'm not going to give you the credit. And that, like you said, Carl, that needs to change. And that was how poetic Renee sat there, the number one chef for 4 years in a row for the restaurant. And he said, no, it's him. And that's just like what he did for you, is that he sparked that creativity for you to do that. And yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, he was one of the exceptions. He was really big on that. Like he would bring, I always remember when I first came up, it was like all the sous chefs. If you were a sous chef, you were allowed to like do the tasting and taste the food, and they would taste it from the menu and they bounce ideas off each other. And that's kind of when I learned, I'm like, wow, like it's not one person that comes up with the dish. It's like the one person that comes up with the idea for the dish. And now all of them are bouncing ideas and they're perfecting this dish and honing it in.
But that's the camaraderie part.
Yeah.
That's a piece of it anyway, but that's super important.
But you have to, like you said, you have to have a chef that's willing enough to be opened to do that. Like when I was in Keith's and we had to do that wedding where we had people that couldn't have onion and garlic, and I'm making barbecue beans. Hello. Yeah. Barbecue beans gets garlic and onions, and I'm sorry. We had to go through these, and it had to be vegetarian. So we couldn't do ham hock. We couldn't have the salt, the smokiness. There was five of us in the catering, and we were all going. One said, hey, you know what you can do? Take the coconut cream from the coconut milk and add that for fat. Take the plant-based butter and add that. Do smoked paprika for the smoke. By the time it was done, people were looking at me and go, can you redo that dish? And I'm like, absolutely not. There was five of us. Nobody wrote anything down. But the dish, as the whole thing culminated, it was such a great dish. I wish I would have written it down. But it was on the fly. We had to do it.
Yeah.
Right? The MacGyver.
The MacGyver.
I just remember opening up the can of beans and then going, hey, isn't this supposed to be like no pork? As I'm about to pour it out, he's like, yeah, the beans have pork in it.
As they should.
Well,
speaking of pork and beans, not really. So I saw John. He took some amazing photos today Obviously, Jeff, you had some pretty dishes.
Oh, he had a pretty dish. Well, I think he took the cake today.
I'm going to quickly skip. I'm glazing over you.
Are you doing a glaze?
I'm glazing over you. You were just a setup. You were a stepping stone into what I'm getting into here, okay? But I did. I saw some pretty photos. Why don't you talk about, you cooked today, and why don't you talk about it?
Yeah. I made a very beautiful dish. So it's a white fennel puree, and I did a lamb, kind of like a lamb rack roulade. So I took it off the bone, stuffed it with duck cell, rolled it, used a little moo glue, keep it all together. I seared that off and then rubbed it in garlic confit and finished it in the oven. There was some brown butter crumble there, some fennel fronds and pickled fennel stems.
You had the roasted fennel, I think, right?
Yeah, I had roasted fennel. So the big thing about me when I cook, I'm heavy into the produce side. Like I love vegetables. I love everything about them. I love seasonality. I love it. I also like using the entire vegetable. So if I'm making a fennel puree, I'm going to use the stems. I'm going to pickle them down. I'm going to use the fronds. Like same thing with the lamb, like the bone. I made the jus. Like I'm taking the bones. I'm roasting the bones out. Like any kind of fat I can find, I'm going to use it somewhere. Like I like to use all the product I possibly can. And that goes back to what I was taught in the beginning. Like we compost it. Or if we didn't compost at the farm, it was saved and used for a dish like that. And that was drilled in me heavily for 5 years at River Park, which kind of stuck with me throughout my whole career. Is zero weight.
That's also about, since the CEO is sitting next to me, it's all about ROI and profitability.
Look at that smile.
he is. It's ear to ear.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But you know, Dan Barber, you know, is probably the person that really put the thing on the map for us. And there's a great.
Oh, huge. Yeah.
He's up in upstate New York. And he's the one that they did a whole YouTube thing about food waste. And it's a great video. It talks about zucchini and how he comes in with the door, then he shows a regular zucchini, then he shows a squash blossom, and then squash leaves, and then the stalk, and then the root. And you're like, holy cow, you can use the whole thing. So now I question the farmers we work with. I'm like, hey, can you, you know, have that? Can you eat this? Because certain things you can't. Like I asked one of the farmers, can you eat strawberry leaves? They're like, we don't know.
I fell in love with the fish. That was a great thing. If you ever watched that.
Which one?
But Dan Barber, I fell in love with the fish.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And just his whole thing about, it was the honey nut squash. He created the honey nut squash. He went to his farmer. He's like, yeah, I love butternut squash, but there's so much water content. Is there any way you can make something smaller than the honey nut squash created? And I think he was also feeding his chickens red pepper. So that the yolk was
reddish.
Yep. It's awesome.
That kind of stuff is amazing. Yeah. So how do we do that? Let's do some cool stuff. Can we do it in experiment science or something?
Let's get a chicken and start peanut peppers.
Yeah. Well, we have chicken farmers.
John, you want
we have plenty of chicken farmers. No? We can talk to Vicky, Nicole.
Just tell them to start feeding them peppers.
Is it like a different, like red pepper, or is it?
I heard it has like, I've had a couple of friends. They said it has peppery notes to it. Yeah. Cause the pepper, I think chickens don't have heat receptors. Like they don't you can feed them hot peppers and it doesn't bother them.
You know who does have heat? John
has heat. Yeah, John didn't try the fuego.
No, he didn't.
The fuego?
No fuego.
It was delicious. Right?
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So when's your next like big project?
Getting back to work because the CEO is sitting next to me.
Big projects. We've been working on a lot of stuff. We recently did a wedding that was 30 people. And it was, we did a high-end menu, wine pairing, 3 courses. So it was the first time, and it's kind of what we're trying to bring Catering the Family to, is these high-end dinners, right? Like, we want to showcase, and not only are we showcasing the food, but I'm going out there and explaining the food to the guest and talking about it and being immersed in it, right? Giving them a show. Like, a lot of the back-of-house guys and chefs, like, some of them, to these days, don't like to go out and don't like to talk to people.
I just showed Juan the dinner collab we did over in Orlando a month or a couple of months ago. Yeah, at the porch.
Is it the same one you showed me when you came by?
I don't know if it was or not.
It could have been the first.
You showed me one, and it was awesome.
Was it at a farm or was it at a market?
Inside a market.
That's the market, porch market. That's the one.
Right. So I got to show one, and yeah, we should talk about doing some cool stuff like
that. Oh, I would love that.
Right. I mean, I think anybody. Well, I know everyone who would be involved in it. You know, from the client, guest, you know, whoever's showing up, everybody would love that.
Oh, and I have a blast.
Well, what's great is, and you mentioned it, we've mentioned it on other shows, and you definitely hit it right on the nail on the head, is that the experience we lost after COVID is the experience of going out and dining, having the chef come out, explaining. Mm. People love that because they have the sense of they know, and especially if you have the farmers there, that's the next level.
Yeah.
All of this only matters if the person talking has some character. You can't you can't send like a, you know,
Ben Stein.
Even he'd be entertaining. You know what I mean? Like in its own.
I'm just talking about the Ferris Bueller
in its own. But it's in its own bizarro world. Mm-hmm. You know, execution that still would be entertaining. You know, but genuinely dry people can't do that, man. You got to get the right. So
we talked about it with Christine because she was the front of the house. There normally is a barrier, Kristen, but there's a barrier between the wall of the kitchen and the front of the house. And some chefs are like, I'm not going out there.
But yeah, that's why
a lot of them,
celebrity chefism is a big deal because now people who have, you know, who are extroverts now get into the kitchen, and those are the ones that go out and talk to everybody, and you know they walk around with a glass of wine and you know do their thing. That's a whole nother personality trait, you know. But I think that's cool. Anyway, I think that you cats, you know, Juan included in this, I think has the
culinary chops,
the gear. What? Yeah. Well, no, the culinary chops are there. I'm talking about the gear, you know.
Well, they have everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a one stop shop.
The sparkle.
The sparkle.
No, it's, what was that called from the Rubber Chef? Chef Rubber? What were they using?
Chef Rubber? Stop it,
stop. Have you seen that stuff?
No.
I'll show you after the show. It's all baking and pastry, and they do a lot of great stuff. And the marketing person there, she's wonderful, but she's so edgy. Madison. That's shout out. Story.
All right. So thank you for coming on the show. Thank you, Juan, for coming on in and hanging out. Your dish was awesome. I know there's going to be really cool stuff that we're all going to do together here. I'm 100% certain. how do they find the company, and how do they find you?
Find the company. We're at cateringbythefamily.com. And then me, I'm Zakari Axel, or underscore Axel on Instagram. So Z-A-K-A-R-I underscore A-X-E-double-L.
You fit that too. All right, John.
Hey, you know what? Make sure you get some sleep. And thank you for coming today. We appreciate you.
You know what? I was almost going to be like, hey, let me give you the code
when I got to the that, house. When I got that, hey, it's 8:30 or I'll be there at 8:30.
I wasn't going to let you do all this without me.
No, you were there for eating.
I was always there for eating. John, as always, man, photography, awesome. You both chefs here today, amazing food. We are out. Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity.
Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.